You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Back second half of the show. It's been a busy one so far. A number of guests already. We are not done yet. A few more to roll before we wrap it up here. Let's get back to the calls. And Jackson is up next. Hello, Jackson. Jackson, are you there? I know the feeling. John is up next in St. Louis. Hello, John.
Paul, how are you doing today?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about comments made by Dawn Staley after the loss to the Iowa team. Hello?
Yeah, I'm waiting for your comments.
Well, I just thought she was a little bit condescending towards a tremendous effort by Iowa. And I kind of sensed that she had a little chip on her shoulder, Paul.
Well, allow me to ask you, John. I've seen what she said in relation to defending her team and about criticism. What specifically... Right. Didn't you like, or did you find so objectionable?
Well, I thought she kind of, I guess, quote unquote, kind of blamed the other team.
How and did I hate to be a lawyer here in a deposition, but how did she blame the other team?
Well, specifically, she needed to take more responsibility about her team's lack of performance, and they didn't step to the plate and play the traditional, really tough defense that they're, you know, we've all been accustomed to seeing over the last 5 to 7 years with their team. I mean, I just thought that, you know, she didn't give the Iowa team enough credit for playing a great game and, you know, stepping to the plate and shutting them down.
Well, I thought... Again, my impressions, I thought she was defending her team based on what the media characterization was, not the Iowa.
Well, I guess I don't see it, Paul. I mean, you know, she's been on top of the world here. You know, like I said, the last 5 to 7 years here, she's built a tremendous program. And, you know, they were heavily favored against a good Iowa team, which really, quite frankly, Paul, wasn't even in the same league with talent-wise as them. And to have that kind of performance,
I'm going to just simply say this again, John. She complimented the other team. What she was talking about was the media characterization that her team, I think her words were, we're not a bunch of bar fighters. And she was talking about how everyone, and it started with Geno, I don't think she had anything but respect for the team that beat her. And I'm frankly still, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but I'm not really sure I understand what you took from her comments and how you have turned this around and made her less than magnanimous in what she had to say about Iowa.
Well, all I can say, Paul, is maybe you're listening to a different comments made by
I will say this, and I'm not trying to do anything other than respond. I mean, I know Dawn Staley very well, and I feel like I understood exactly what she was saying. Dawn Staley's always going to protect her team, especially when the narrative all year long has been what she was referring to. And Gina Auriemma really went national with it when most famous coach in the game attacked her team. And she has had a chip on her shoulder about that, because she's always going to support and defend her team. But you have constructed a bridge between those comments and being disrespectful to Iowa, which I don't think is true. But again, we'll just disagree here. But since I have the button, I have the last word on that. Trey is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Pa, I'm going to comment on what he said. I thought Don Staley was very gracious in that losing effort. And I didn't like, things that Gino come out and said. But, Paul, you know, when you're on top like she is, Alabama's gone through it, Saban, everybody's going to criticize your team and say something about it. That's just what happens when you're on top. But I'd like to talk to you about I just really thought the women's, especially the Final Four and championship game, was so much better than the men's for some reason. And I want to give my opinion on the Clark Reese situation, if I may. Paul, the Louisville girls, the South Carolina girls, Iowa, Clark, nobody had a problem that I saw and was very gracious about everything that I can see from any player or coach speaking. The acts that were classless to me is the adults on social media. They have shown so much more lack of class towards young ladies when we are trying to promote women's sports. And I'm talking about names like Thug and White Shadow and Get, and that just ruined the whole situation of the women's tournament when we should be congratulating how exciting it was. And the person that got lost in all this was the young lady that come off the bench, Jasmine Carson. I think she had 22, 24 points and was 5 for 5 from the three-point line. And it just goes to show you that if you prepare well and you sit and wait your turn, when your time is called, when you have the opportunity, she stepped up. And she was the difference in the ball game to me. So I just wanted to kind of give you my opinion on that. But the stuff I've seen on social media, it's just classless. And I hate to see that this tournament, that last game, turned into this racial situation, because it's made me really upset, Paul. So that's my 2 cents worth, and I appreciate you taking my call, Paul.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And Steve is in Myrtle Beach. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on John from St. Louis, the comments that he made about Don Staley.
Right.
I was telling the fellow that called me just a minute, or that I talked to, I'm a Carolina alumnus, and I've pulled for Carolina forever, and I think Don Staley's the best thing, without a doubt, that's ever happened to our basketball program there as far as women are concerned. She takes up for her team. She's been a stand-up person. She's a great recruiter, and I just appreciate the job she's doing. I hope we got her there for another 17 years.
Well, I think you do. Thank you, Steve. You be well. Ashley is in Tennessee. Hello, Ashley.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I think a lot of people are really against that little girl, Angel, and I think that's awful that they're making awful comments about her. She's just 20 years old, and I know myself and all the rest of them, including the ones that are making those comments, were probably the ones with mouths when they were 20. Or, you know, it's just awful, I think.
Ashley, thank you for sharing that. We head to the break. We are busy with guests today, and our next one is coming up in just a minute. Cole Kublik will give us a preview of this weekend with the Auburn spring game, and look around to a few other places.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, welcome back. As we continue here, always great to say hello to Cole Kublik from Jocks in Birmingham and, of course, the SEC Network. Cole, thank you for being here. Let's start with Auburn. The spring game is this weekend. Optimism seems pretty high. You expect that with Hugh Freeze, the new coach. What are you hearing and what do you expect?
I am hearing good things, Paul. The offensive line was a big point of contention. It was an area that we knew was going to have to be improved. That was addressed through the portal. Also addressed, I think, with Jake Thornton, who is one of the bright young offensive line coaches in college football. And throughout camp, I believe that's a position that has gained some momentum, has looked pretty good. I think the next in line for me would have been wide receiver. And we've heard Hugh Freeze say some good things about some of the guys that are going through. There's a few that are not participating fully, like a Camden Brown, that they could rely on this fall. But those are the two positions that I want to see first and foremost. A lot of folks are going to say quarterback. We've seen a lot of Robbie Ashford. We've seen a lot of TJ Finley. Haven't seen as much of Holden Garner. But the offensive line is going to have some new faces that have to be good. And that position's got to get better if Auburn's going to have a chance to compete. But that wide receiver position, I think, is one that has kind of moved ahead of the offensive line for me, Paul. And I thought Hugh said something very interesting this week when he was asked about that group, and he brought up even Ronaldo Fairweather, who's going to be more of a tight end than a wide receiver. And he complimented a lot of the guys, but something that sort of slipped through the cracks was he said, you know, we need 8 wide receivers in our system and the way we run this scheme. And, Paul, there are a lot of people that will struggle to give you one sort of go-to eraser, you know, big X wide receiver that can take over a game. Now, that's not that you can't do it collectively if you have a couple of guys that do take big steps forward, but that was a little bit alarming to me to hear that number of bodies as far as pass catchers that Auburn's going to need to be quality players for them this fall, because we just don't know how many they have right now. There's not a lot of proven commodities at that position that are going to be really scary for SEC defenses unless we see improvement. So that's what I'll be watching on the offensive side of the football come Saturday.
Talking to Cole Kublik, the game this weekend. Cole, let me hit you with another big story that I know you get asked about a lot in Birmingham, and that's what's happening in Alabama. It's seemingly been a little quieter than usual. I don't know if it's quiet in where you are, but what can you tell us about camp, specifically the quarterback race?
Yeah, I think it's if you ask me, Paul, I think it's one that's going to go well past the spring. And it's so interesting because, and I know you'll remember this time, if you go back 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, if you didn't name your starting quarterback at the end of spring football, something was wrong with your team. I mean, that was the fire alarm. That was, you know, start ringing the bells and something's going wrong. If you didn't get out of spring ball and say, okay, this is our guy, he's going to take us through the summer, and then he's going to be that leader starting fall camp. Now, there's some strategy to it. I think some coaches, they want to make sure the guys just don't bail out after spring ball and go play somewhere else with the portal. But I think Jalen Milroe is going to get every shot. Do I believe that means he ends up being Alabama starting quarterback? No. He's going to offer you more athleticism. He's going to offer you more variety from a play-calling perspective, but I don't know if that's really what Tommy Reese wants. And I don't know if it's what Nick Saban wants, because there has been one thing consistent back from when I met with Nick Saban two times in the first 4 weeks of last season, and it was balance. And he talked to me when we met with him from a television perspective both times about balance then. I've heard him reference it in spring practice. And, Paul, there's another thing that Coach Saban has said repeatedly, and if you listen to him, you'll probably hear it again before spring's over. He says, we've got to get away from just dropping back. We can't just be a team that drops back 50 or 60 times a game. And I think what Coach Saban's trying to say there is they need to add play action. Yes, they need some RPOs as well, but they need to add bootlegs. They need to add screens. Keep in mind, he is a defensive mind first, so he probably sees it through the glasses of – How are teams most difficult to defend? Well, when you make my linebackers and my safeties and my defensive ends think about more things potentially being run, that makes life more difficult. If I got defensive ends that can just tee off and think about what their pass rush moves are going to be all day, or linebackers that know that they're just going to drop, or they have one RPO read on, and if that does not hand it off, they know what space to drop into, life becomes very easy for that group. So whoever can provide his offense with the most balance, and that doesn't always just mean run pass. I think it means a variety of plays that can be run and how they can be run and how you can present them. I think the quarterback that can offer up the most there for the Alabama offense is going to be the guy that wins the job. But also keep in mind, I mean, how many times have we seen Coach Saban go one, two, three games into the season before actually naming the guy? So I think we'll get a game or two into the season, Paul, before we actually know who is that number one quarterback for Alabama.
Well, let's talk about the rest of the offense, because and we all know what's leaving there, but there's plenty of talent remaining at running back, at wide receiver. Fans seem to be pretty fired up about that. The line last year wasn't great. Take us through the entire offense.
Well, I think offensive line first, Paul, is where I would point. And I think that you have an offensive line coach that's now going to be his second year. It'll be a little bit easier for the guys to have an understanding of what's expected of them, the handwork, the footwork, where the hat placement should be. And I think they have a good offensive line coach in-house. And now that'll be a little more second nature. But that group underperformed last year, bottom line. And I've heard a couple of those guys talk about wanting to be more physical, wanting to impose their will on teams. And I know that's something that Coach Saban wants, and I know that's something that Eric wants as well. But that doesn't just happen overnight. I mean, you can talk about it and want to do it, but it's a mentality that really has to be there 24/7. I do think they'll get more opportunities to be that kind of a group, but they're still going to be a little bit young in spots. They have great depth at center. I think they have, in T.J. Booker, an absolute star at guard. I think he will be one of the best offensive linemen in the SEC by the end of the season. I'm a little bit interested in the tackle position. I think one tackle will be fine, but another tackle is probably going to come down to a couple of guys battling it out right up until the season, or maybe even like quarterback go into a game or two into the season. So that one's one that I think could be maybe in the portal. You look for another guy that could come in and help. Wide receiver, you're led by Jermaine Burton, but you have a young core of guys that have flashed at times that I actually think could end up being good players. The depth of that position is not really concerning to me. And with the way this offense is going to be run, it's not overly concerning for me either. Tight end's what I want to see, because last year we heard about a couple of the younger players that were super athletic and physical that could potentially help that team, but you had Cam Latu in front of those guys. They weren't really going to take that leap. I think it's a group that by midseason we could be talking about as a strength for the Alabama offense, and tailback's going to be fine. I mean, Roydell Williams and, you know, the guys that we've seen play a little bit, they weren't going to jump in front of Jahmyr Gibbs, but we've seen enough of that group collectively that that's not going to be an issue for the Alabama offense. And I think structurally, schematically, if you do offer up more balance, if you do offer up more variety of formations and plays and motions, and it's not as reliant on your quarterback dropping back and just making things happen on his own, whether that's just getting the ball out after two steps or moving around in the pocket and being able to manipulate things and then get rid of the ball, that's going to help all of those players that we mentioned at every position. So I feel good about Alabama's offense. Now, you get a quarterback that turns it over or doesn't understand how to read a defense in a game, that's going to be an issue. But everything that's going to be around whoever wins that quarterback spot, I think has a chance to be a little bit better. And I expect more complimentary football on both sides of the ball for Alabama going into 2023.
Cole, before you go, and I know you're close and get to know all these coaches, so we're not – picking on someone here, but of the schools that we talk about a lot, Which school are you most concerned about going into the season?
Probably Texas A&M, just because, and we talked about this on our show with Greg, Paul, and so many people, and you actually joined us, and we talked about it with you, and I think you were in line with what Greg and I thought. Because, listen, I played for Jimbo. He's my offensive coordinator at Auburn, and I've known him for a long time, and I have a pretty good feel for just how he is and what he is and his demeanor. And I think a lot of people jumped to a lot of conclusions after that initial press conference in the spring, and there were some guys that were trying to catch him saying one thing or not committing to something. I didn't take any of that as, oh, well, he's not going to let Bobby Petrino call plays. That, to me, is not an issue. You don't bring Bobby Petrino in if you're going to try to share it or split it or not run it a certain way. It's going to be his offense. Now, Jimbo will have a lot to say about it, but the frustration that was shown by those questions being asked before spring practice even started, that concerns me a little bit. Because, you know, like I know, it's going to be asked about all the time. And when things go haywire for a quarter or a series or a game or a three-game stretch, those questions are going to be hammered at that point. And so if he doesn't like answering those questions now, what's it going to be like if they do struggle out of the gate for two or three games and they've got Miami early on the road? It's going to be a difficult game against Mario Cristobal and a team that's got a lot of talent. So that part concerns me a little bit. And then just, Paul, I don't know what the mentality is in that building right now. And that doesn't mean it's bad. That doesn't mean it's negative. I just don't know. There's so much turnover. You got a couple new coaches coming in. You have some guys that were obviously not dialed into being college football players last year. And I think most of those guys have moved on. And that there will be some addition by subtraction on that A&M roster with those fellows. But you also have some players that couldn't stay healthy last year. You have some depth concerns at certain spots. I think offensive line, I think linebacker. Those are spots that concern me from a depth perspective a little bit. So just, I guess, the overall mentality, the overall ideology in the building of what it's going to be and what it is and who's going to step up and be a leader. I think Texas A&M needs leadership more than anything else. They need maturity and leadership. And that's why guys like Max Wright, who most people aren't going to talk about, are super valuable on that roster. But they need more of it. They relied on a lot of young players last year, but they need players to step up that can go grab a guy in the locker room and say, you're not going to act this way. Or tell a guy to just beat it, just get out of here, kick rocks, go play somewhere else. We don't need you. And it's not that I don't think Jimbo can help provide that. It's just they've been so young and relied on so many guys that have come in and played immediately that they haven't had to develop it over time. So if they find leadership, they can be okay. But just there are so many questions past the roster and the depth chart that I don't know the answers to right now. That would probably be the one that gives me a lot of concern, because I actually think they could be a really good football team this year.
Fantastic conversation with Cole Kubik. We appreciate it. We head to the break now. More to come later with a few more guests. We will also get your phone calls in here in just a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And welcome back here. Let's check in with Josh, who is in Birmingham. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to tell you a real quick story. I'm sure you know and remember Paul Harvey, the Paul Harvey radio show, I'm sure, right?
Of course.
So I remember as a kid growing up in East Kentucky. I live in Birmingham now, but growing up in Kentucky, there were three kind of staples in my life as my with my dad. and they were in this order. It was church, Kentucky basketball, and the Paul Harvey show.
He was
and I'll never forget sitting around the table listening, you know, to the Paul Harvey show almost every day. I think it was 3:36 p.m. for what it's worth, but neither here nor there. I just want to tell you that, you know, every day I listen to your show with now with my kids, and it quite honestly, one of them actually encouraged me to call today. I just want to tell you that story of how much that meant to me, a part of my childhood and a memory that I'll always remember. I lost my dad about a year ago. But my kids now, hopefully, they'll take that away from their childhood as someday, right, where it was things they remember about their dad was church, Kentucky basketball, and the Paul Feinbaum show. And, Paul, now you know the rest of the story.
Well, Josh, thank you. It's a funny story. I grew up as a kid listening to him, and one of my first radio jobs was at a news station, and I can't remember, I think it was 5:15 or 5:30, you had the Paul Harvey rest of the story, which went on for 15 minutes. And I asked the news director or somebody once, I said, is there a reason why that has to run for 15 minutes right in the middle of a sports show? He said, because it's Paul Harvey and it's the most rated and anticipated moment of the day. And just like the gentleman said, he was truly an institution in radio history. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Josh is up next. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Paul, hit him with the flex, T-Town.
You got it.
How are you, man?
We are doing great. How about you?
Doing good. I literally just cut my entire grass at my house while I've been on hold.
Would you like to come over and do mine now?
No, I'll pass. Thanks.
Okay.
So I got a question I want to know. Has Jim from Crestwood, West Georgia water boy, called into the Feinbaum show, and how long?
It's a great question, Josh. And for those who don't know the history of the show, and I realize that includes most of you, he was truly a legendary caller. I'm saying all this to set up the fact that we found out about 2 years ago that he had passed away. And somebody in his family called, and he was just an amazing. I mean, he wouldn't call anymore, but I did a signing in Birmingham about 8 years ago when a book came out, and he showed up, and I literally begged him. I said, "You have to call again." He said, "I'm done." He said, "But I still listen." We had a Hall of Fame last year for the first time, and he was in there, and he is without a doubt one of the greatest callers ever.
He is, Paul, and my favorite thing about his call, which I've been listening since, you know, 2000 or so. I don't listen every day, but I'm certainly familiar with the whole show and whatnot. And my favorite thing about his calls was he gave you hell every time that he called, and I loved it.
But there was literally nothing I could do to persuade him that I was telling the truth on any subject.
No, you were just the West Georgia water boy, and that was it.
Yeah, I'm glad he lived long enough to see that change. So,
hey, a couple more things, Paul, before I get off. Thanks for letting me have my time. But I miss Tammy being on the show. She was great. And of course, all the callers, legend, and I'm in, and you know, come on, Jim. But all the caller of the year, kudos to giving it to the people who participate every year to you and grind it out with you and make the calls. And so kudos for that, Miss Tammy. Shout out to Jim from Crestwood who gives Feinbaum hell every day. Rest in peace, brother. And one shout out to my good friend, Pat Norrell. He's fighting with every bit that he's got left with stage 4 cancer. Love you, Pat, and I'm praying for you. Thanks for letting me have my time, Paul.
Thank you, Josh, and we all are. Thank you very, very much. Booker is up next in New Jersey.
Hello, Paul, and congratulations to my fellow Carolinian cat daddy.
Oh, yeah.
For being the caller, for winning. And, Paul, you messed up my right arm.
How is that? I think I know the answer.
I've been signing too many autographs.
That's great.
Yeah, I made it to the I'm in the Hall of Fame in my college, Benedict College, down in Columbia. But making the Sweet 16 on the Paul Feinbaum show supersedes all of that.
That's
and,
funny.
And legend, that was a awesome concession speech. Now, Paul, I was laying low. I was not going to say anything. But now I really have to tip my hat to how you handled that fella. I want to call him a knucklehead, but I won't. The one from St. Louis.
Right, yeah. A couple of minutes ago.
Paul, as much as we don't want it to happen, race and class will stick up its head in this country. If you give me a moment, my early career, I was a pastor, pastoring what they call circuit churches, two Sundays a month, one at each one of them, and I was a banker. I was one of the first African Americans hired at one of the major banks, the headquarters up in the town where you live,
mm-hmm.
back in 65. And you, in management, you had to do some kind of community service. So I took a job of coaching a girls' basketball team, you know, girls like maybe 9, 10, 11 years old. And we got all kinds of taunts. The referees just wouldn't give me a break. I got technical fouls, and he would lambast my girls. They hated for him. They show up, and guess who they were?
Who's that?
White girls
mm-hmm.
from the other side of the Mill Hill in Spartanburg. They called them all kinds. So class and race still sticks its ugly head. It was just awesome how the other side of the town, where the clubs were, the clubs, the home of the Silver Tans, the Kiwanis, and I had to go around and beg and scrap up uniforms. The girls were fired. Now Don Staley was only these girls that I was coaching. They were called all kinds of names that they should not have been called. Don Staley was just defending her team from being called bar fighters and monkeys and street thugs. And I watched them one night. They played, I believe it was North Dakota. They won the game. And it's like if you take five or six blind men, put them around an elephant, they're going to, if you ask them how does he look, they're going to talk, they're going to tell it from their perspective, from where they were standing. Don Staley was not doing anything. She was responding to what the coach of Connecticut and all of the insults that they kept throwing at her team. She had to defend her girls. And I thank you for the way you handle that knucklehead.
Thank you very, very much. We head to the break. Fantastic call there. We're back. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Late on a Wednesday, we continue with your phone calls. Another guest coming up at the top of the hour. Let's check out Snake up next. Hello, Snake.
Oh, man, oh, man. There's a lot of people make a lot of ado about nothing, you know. Hey, listen, Paul, I grew up playing numerous different sports, all that was available to me. And Tony was a part of it. I mean, it didn't hurt my feelings. You know, it made me play harder. I'm not going to ask you. I'm going to tell you, you know good and well that there's not that many athletes or fans that are that sensitive to a harmless gesture. I mean,
no, I don't think it's debatable, frankly. I mean, first of all, great athletes have it in their DNA to be like that. They all
exactly
they have confidence, and sometimes they're prone to show it.
Yeah, well, you know, I realize, you realize, everybody realizes that you can cross the line. I mean,
sure you can.
Race should never come into the picture when it comes to it, but that basketball game the other night, I think that was a harmless gesture, and I have the perfect entrance song for women's basketball at LSU. It'd probably go down as one of the greatest of all time. I remember when I was a kid, well, you was a kid then too, long, you remember a feller named Johnny Otis?
I do, yes.
There was a song came out, I think I was probably 3 or 4 years old, Hand Job, the Hand Job. If they would play that song before the entrance of their team, it would blow the roof off the place.
I'll see if we can get that done, Snake. Thank you. Augie is up next in New Orleans.
I didn't understand that call, Paul, but never heard that. The only Otis I know is Otis the Town Drunk from Mayberry, so maybe I'm behind the times. But
I remember Otis Redding had a couple of good songs back in the day.
Well, that's true. Otis Redding sitting on the dock of the bay. Yeah, that's right.
Watching the tide roll away.
Yeah, well, you know, that's always famous when Bama doesn't make the playoffs, which is very rare, but, you know, we do bring it out. But, Paul, did I hear, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, I can't forget listening to the podcast, but did I hear you say that the Cicero of Columbus, Jeff from Ohio, was the most hated man in Feinbaum radio show history?
He's up there, yes.
Wow. You know, I got to say, I enjoy Jeff. Now, I like to, you know, I like to criticize him, but he did give me my name, Paul, although he disrespected my educational and professional accomplishments by giving me a moniker that is very insulting. I got to say, he's somebody you when you hear Jeff from Columbus is up next, you turn the TV or the radio up to listen to. So you got to love your enemies, don't you?
Yeah, the only thing I would say about Jeff from Columbus, you may turn the sound up, but usually about 30 seconds in, you say to yourself,
you turn it back down.
Yeah. Isn't this the same call that I heard the last time he was on?
Well, if he doesn't bring up Tim Brando or somebody else, then you're like, okay, this call is not meeting the typical Jeff from Columbus standards. But breaking the subject to Arch Manning. And I don't know, has your relationship with Archie Manning improved any, or is it still kind of just, you know, lukewarm or luke cold?
I think lukewarm would be good.
So would you say that unless Arch Manning wins the Heisman Trophy in the next 4 or 5 years, this whole hullabaloo over the greatest player that ever existed is going to be a bust for him?
Well, I mean, I would like to see him play first before I start pontificating on whether he's a Heisman candidate or not. But I do think he is the most anticipated recruit in recent memory.
Well, I mean, based on nowadays, the buildup is, it seems like, more important than the actual product that you see in the field. So they built this kid up when he was a sophomore in high school to be the best quarterback that ever existed. And then the whole recruitment saga about where he's going to go and where he's not going to go. So he picks Texas. And I saw something on the internet a couple of days ago, and it was quoting Archie Manning, where Arch had to apologize to Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. I'm sorry I didn't pick you. I mean, how egotistical is that? I mean, I see a lot of ego in that. And if this guy doesn't go to Texas, win a national championship, and win the Heisman Trophy, then I don't see why he was apologizing to anybody. Well, I mean, do you understand where I'm coming from?
Let me state, I've never met Arch. I know the rest of the family very well, and that does not sound like a Manning. And I think sometimes you can see a snippet of something and read too much into it. I really don't read anything into that other than the fact that he genuinely liked Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. And I'm sure he said, listen, I really wanted to come here. But, you can go down that road by yourself. We will take a break, but we'll all go down another road together, and that comes up right after this break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.